You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment.
It's Friday night, and it's time for chaos. It's also time for the season 2 mid-season finale, episode 10. This is it, halfway through the season. I like to call it the mid-season finale.
Sweeps week.
Yep, sweeps week. We're pulling out all the stops. We're going to have several guest stars pop in throughout today's session.
Great.
And then we're taking a 3-month break before we come back with episode 11. No, I'm kidding. That part is not happening. But wouldn't that be fun? Then we could all breathe.
I would have nothing left to do, so I am against this.
No, we keep recording.
Plan.
We make them wait.
Oh, that's fine.
Make them.
No, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Just
keep
recording.
Just give me a reason to wake up.
Take a break.
I realize that this is a game to you, Troy, but for the rest of us, this is the only thing tethering us to life and sanity.
This is so much better than the real world. I can't believe it's been 10 episodes. Well, it hasn't yet, but it will be in just under 2 hours. Thoughts so far on London. The London chapter, however you want to call it.
Having a ball.
I mean. Yeah.
Is it what you expected? What did you expect after the events of New York and the Juju House?
I mean, to be honest, I got a little nervous when we started hearing about shopkeepers, and I know that thread still hasn't been fully explored, but it was just like, is this just going to be the same thing again? Like, obviously, just, you know, that's not,
left
not
over from
dogging you, Troy, or whatever, but just like, oh, we have another suspicious thing. There's a cult. I'm guessing that's just going to be evergreen. But it was still like, I've still been having a blast, obviously, and, I feel like we kind of got into a groove way sooner than we did in season 1, which is understandable because we've been playing together for now for a while. But yeah, it's great. I'm enamored.
You're enamored
with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you guys feel like you know what's going on here in this section of the story?
I have
sort
a
of
theory.
Uncovered some dramatic
yeah.
some people. Yeah.
I have guesses, but nothing has coalesced yet.
Yeah. Right?
But there's enough tantalizing threads that want tugging on and weaving together.
A couple of key suspects, a couple key locations, some threads that still need looking at. So where do you think Lesser Edale fits into all of this?
That's what's blowing my mind.
Yeah. At first I thought this was total like a side quest territory, but now my imagination's running wild. It's like it's all connected.
I still think
man.
It might be like a bit of a side quest.
Yeah.
It could be a bait and switch.
Yet.
Yeah, it could be a bait and switch with this werewolf thing. It might not be a werewolf. Maybe it's
maybe
another,
it's maybe
a
it's the red herring in the story. I don't know. My brain goes, I've been doing a rewatch of Twin Peaks since Twin Peaks Day on the 24th. So now my brain's all going to like, what if somebody comes back? Like we see another character, but it's not them. It's their identically looking cousin.
Did you start back with like season 1 of Twin Peaks? This is the second time Twin Peaks has been mentioned in recordings this week. God, what a great show. Even season 2 is a disaster, but it's still worth watching.
Oh,
I never did it.
It loses the plot halfway. But I still love it. Like, it's still, like,
disagree.
It gets so weird.
I love season 2.
But I love weird.
Yeah, it definitely gets much weirder because Lynch left, and I think they just brought in a bunch of people to, like, try and Lynch it up, and it's just a lot more craziness, a lot more dreams.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant season 3. Yes,
season 3 was insane and awesome.
Yeah, I love season 3. Season 2 gets like, but introduces a whole bunch of new characters that I'm like, why are you here? But, yeah. But I really but I, that's why I'm trying to like think, like, if this was, because Troy, you tell a story so cinematically, and I'm like, what's next? What's the thing that's going to pop up? And almost
it does kind of feel like you're in a little Twin Peaksy town trying to solve a murder. And it definitely has that vibe, this little
Wicker Man situation. Yeah.
Instead of a mountain town, it's like this weird valley town, and everybody knows everybody. What did kind of was the constable or the reverend last week was like, we are a town that deals with small problems. Nothing like this ever happens here.
It's also hard for me to not go and think about like I try to like do the math on it, because like this entire, I feel like I read this a long time ago, that this entire campaign was written by like a screenwriter, right? Who during like a writer's strike.
Yeah. Larry DiTillo.
And it was like in the mid 80s. So in my mind, I'm like thinking about like, all right, what were the tropes during the 80s of horror movies? And I was like, and this whole thing obviously has a lot of American Werewolf in London, this storyline. So I was like, that came out early. I think that's like an 82 joint or something. That's an early 80s. So that had already come out. So maybe he's cribbing on that. Like, but then obviously other people have contributed to the story since then. So
I'm sitting there
trying to like do the Rubik's Cube of like what cinematic tropes are we falling into?
Several of you will be excited to know this, because I don't know if you know this. Larry DiTillo, who is like the uber creator of this, there were several other writers involved, but it was kind of like his brainchild, also is known for creating She-Ra.
Yes.
From the He-Man universe. He is the co-creator of She-Ra.
Amazing.
Which was wonderful back in the day. Remember the old He-Man movie? That was a weird one.
Don't get me started, Troy. I am ready to go. I've got a God Skeletor figure right there.
Whoa. Let this be our final battle.
Frank Langella, the performance of a lifetime.
Did I ever tell you about the time I was in a tiny little bathroom with Frank Langella after he won the Tony? And I heard him straining to pee.
Was he doing it as Nixon or whatever the fuck he won that?
I don't know if
Tony
I've told this on a podcast before or if I just have this story, because I used to work for Getty Images, and one of the gigs I have is like I'd go to events and like just edit EPKs, electronic press kits of events. And so one time I did the Tonys, and it was on, I think it was at the Beacon Theater. And so I was in a hotel across the street, and I'd run to the Beacon. Producer would come out, give me footage, go back to this hotel, and the hotel is also where all the winners and nominees were coming over to being interviewed. So at one point, I'm waiting for some footage. I'm kind of hanging out. And I'm like, I got to use the restroom. So I go into this tiny little one-stall, two-urinal situation. And there's an envelope sitting on the sink. I apologize if I've told this before in the Glass Cannon podcast. There's an envelope sitting on the sink. And I kind of just glance over, and it's Frank Langella. And I look down. And I realize the envelope is the envelope with his name that he had just won. They hand it to the winners afterwards. Now, I don't. In my mind, he had the Tony sitting on the top of the urinal, but I don't think that was true. But the envelope was sure there. So I'm like, I go in to the stall. I'm a stall man. Story for another time. I like a stall. I call it the executive. I go in there. I like to really enjoy myself. And
when someone has to come in and actually take a crap, you are there just casually peeing.
I have a nervous bladder. And I'm just listening to him, old man, pee it up. And I'm like, all right, sounds like he's going to be a while. I'm just going to get out of here. So I go and I go to wash my hands, and I splash water all over his Tony envelope. I basically turn on the sink. It's one of those sinks. You're like, let me just turn it on the tiniest amount everywhere. And I'm like,
fire hose.
And I just leave. That was my Frank Langella story.
So do you think he framed that, Troy, and that there's like a tiny little quantity of Troy LaValle DNA.
Oh, I imagine. Glass in the, like, look, like, wait a minute. Is that a water spot?
He probably has a story about you being like, this guy who went into the stall, he didn't even go poop. And then he came out and he splashed my envelope. That sounds like him.
He splashed my envelope. That
I
son
acted
of a gun.
Like I had trouble with my prostate.
Just to make him leave.
Yeah.
Well, today's episode is dedicated both to Frank Langella and the cinematic classic He-Man starring Dolph Lundgren. Let's all make a luck roll, because you might need it. You might need it in an episode like this.
Oh, dear.
It's not the middle of the show. I don't feel right doing it.
I know, right? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
We're not hastily doing it after remembering it halfway through.
Do I want to fail? Yeah.
Yes, you want to fail. Okay, good. There are two roles you want to fail in this game. Luck improvement roles.
That's right. Yeah,
and sanity, like to understand, the intelligence role to fully understand the complexity of your... what you see. You guys haven't rolled a sanity roll in a while, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
fresh country air is keeping you regular. I'm so excited. I had a little extra time to prep this one, and I just had some doing them like, ooh. And I also like thought you might have got to some of this stuff before, so I feel like I've double and triple prepped it, and I also feel like I might forget everything, but I'm just really excited to play and explore with you guys and see what we come up with for the mid-season finale. Last week, your investigation continued into the mysterious deaths that took place 3 months ago in the little country village of Lesser Edale. Whether Jackson came out here himself to investigate or not, you don't know. You know this story was a story of note for him, and you are in the thick of it now. A young girl was torn to shreds on one night, leaving only her grieving father behind. A husband and father of two young girls was also torn apart, leaving a widow and the young daughters behind. Then on the third night, a man was attacked but somehow managed to live, a man by the name of Harold Short. On that same night, the constable, the only policeman in this one-horse town, Constable Tumwell, went out, tracked a large dog to the edge of the woods, and put three bullets in its hide. The body of the animal was never found, but there have been no further attacks, so the case is considered closed. Even though the townsfolk still all hear this mysterious howling through the valley almost every night, increasingly so as of late. The father of the girl who was killed says a neighbor of his saw the son of the ruler of the area. Ruler of the area is Lord Arthur Vane. Saw the son, Lawrence Vane, wandering around on the night of her murder, looking distraught. He thinks that the Vanes know something that they're not telling us. They live up in Plum Castle. You got Lord Arthur Vane. He's a member of the House of Lords in London. He's returned home in the wake of all this awfulness here in Lesser Edale, joining his young son, Lawrence, and his daughter, who keep house while he's away. You speak to the vicar, Reverend Stratton, after attending one of his services. He seems troubled, perhaps by the nagging feeling that whatever Constable Tumwell shot didn't end the problem, or perhaps by the fact that he saw the creature himself, a creature he describes as a huge, dark shape shrouded by the mist with burning red eyes. You inquire about the Vanes, and the Reverend gives you a history lesson on their reign. Carter notices strange letterhead on his desk that reads the Derwent Order of the Golden Druid, as well as a paper with the word Vane on it and a curious Latin translation guide. You go and speak with the constable, and he is steadfast in his conviction that the matter is closed, even though with a psychology check, you detect this hint that maybe even he isn't so sure. You use his phone, the one phone in this town, to follow up on a phone number you found after breaking into Harold Short's house, where you reach his brother in the seaside town of Skegness, where Harold is recuperating ever since the attack. You convince the brother to speak with Harold, who is clearly still haunted by the memory of the attack, and he describes the creature just as the Reverend did, mentioning the burning red eyes. You leave the constable and head back through the rain to the Laughing Horse Inn, where you're staying. You see a boisterous crowd surrounding a beautiful young man holding court in the bar in the midst of all this revelry. Feyruz and Margot get into a heated private discussion as they finally openly discuss the fact that they belong to the same secret order. Carter notices that they are embroiled in this discussion, and while he's watching them, he also sees a man at a table nearby who seems to just be staring at both Margot and Feyruz. Meanwhile, Vaughn slowly approaches the man at the center of everyone's attention. Young Lawrence Vane, the heir to Plum Castle. where do we even begin?
I say we just push this off. Let's just stop the session.
Let's just...
the mid-season finale / recap is over.
A little banter, a little recap, and we'll see you in a month.
Peru!
Flashback to Peru. That'd be a good, like,
that actually
this was
be
a TV
sweet.
Show, we start yeah. with Peru and you see some.
Cool.
I'll try to work that in more.
So Carter sees the guy staring at Margot and Feyruz, or staring at Margot and Feyruz.
Yeah, let's pick up there, Carter. Okay. You see this.
All right.
Well, we finished with Vaughn approaching Lawrence Vane, dashing blonde hair, all of like 23, 24, 25. Everyone just looking at him like, what a man of the people, the future ruler of Lesser Edel.
And Vane, this is the same person who was found decidedly not cool looking the night of that murder, right? Like
right.
he was distraught, in quotes. Okay.
Yeah. Lydia Parkin's father said his neighbor, Tom Cordy, saw Lawrence Vane wandering around that night nearby looking distraught.
Okay.
So,
yeah, we'll
focus in on you, Carter. You see this guy, and he's just kind of looking.
The fuck? Okay. I'm going to walk over to him.
As you start to walk over, he gets up from his chair. Oddly, at like the exact same time you begin walking in that direction and starts to head towards the door, you continue to pursue?
Yeah, I'm going to start walking towards him, but I'm going to have a little like swaggy, drunk, like I'm acting drunk.
Acting drunk?
I could have just said that. I don't know why I was fucking...
We'll say as you're walking, a large guy like crosses in front of you with two mugs of ale and you like almost run into him and he spills him. He's like, oh, slow down there, old chap, or you'll be buying the next round.
I'm American.
Well, where are you off to in such a hurry? And he's got the beers and he's kind of like blocking your way.
I think I see someone I recognize. And I try to get around him.
And he's like, oh, no, what's the matter? Why don't you come have a drink with my friend and I?
And
he just reeks of alcohol.
Two shakes of a lamb's tail, I promise.
Hey, ask you something. Hey,
yes?
I don't mean to be rude, but I saw you on the other side of the bar, and you see the guy is now out the door. What's wrong with your face?
God.
It needs some air. Excuse me, and I run. I'm gonna run. If you want me to roll, I'll fucking roll.
Come on! So you just leave him. Run outside.
Yep.
You get outside. You don't see the guy. Give me a spot hidden.
Oh no. Okay. Fair enough.
I'll roll some dice.
No, I failed it. I don't see.
Okay. Want to use some luck? You want to do something like
I don't
a new tactic?
Push the roll.
Oh, push the spot.
Yeah, you can push.
Okay. So Carter like covers both eyes. He covers the other eye for a second. So he does this to try to like, maybe this will attune me to the evening
light. It's raining. It's raining then, still.
Yeah, and then open and really pry my eyeball open. This isn't great, guys. My spot hidden's like a 20, like a high 20s. It's a 28. Nope.
No.
32. My eyeball falls out.
All right. No, here's what I'm going to say. Remember, sometimes you can fail forward, okay?
Uh-huh.
And this is what happens is you look around and you see this guy has made considerable distance between the entrance to the Laughing Horse Inn and where he is, which seems to be like towards the southern end of Lesser Edel, like walking off into like off the beaten path. So he must have like took off.
He just
the
ran,
second he
yeah.
got outside. Like there's no way he could have caused created that much distance between you and him. Do you want to pursue?
I'll go. If he's going off the trail, I want to see where exactly he's going off the road or whatever.
Okay.
So yes.
All right. So he's on the road for a little bit, and you see him goes off the road, and he goes like I don't want to say into the woods, but he's not on like the normal path. He doesn't seem to be going near any houses or anything. Are you following stealthily or just trying to keep pace?
I could roll a stealthy thing.
Okay.
which is a little better than my spot hidden. 22 under 61.
Okay, I love this. In the rain, in the night, you stealthily follow this man. You kind of catch up to where you initially saw him and go into this. Again, I don't want to call it woods, but it's off the beaten path. You go off the beaten path, and you hear rustling up ahead. And then you hear the opening of a car door.
Oh, these fuckers with this car. Okay.
Okay. You hear the opening of a car door. You come to a clearing, and you see this guy getting ready to get into a car.
Okay. Is there a shrub that I could throw myself into?
Yeah, go ahead and give me another stealth.
Roll for foliage. We're rolling 21 under 61. Yeah.
All right, you hide in a bush.
Ha! Just like...
And you feel like he doesn't see you, however, he stops for a moment. And looks around. And then he goes to get in the car. He shuts the door.
Does the car look like the car we spotted?
It's hard to see in the night, hard to see in the rain. Maybe, maybe not.
Okay.
It's unclear. And you don't see anybody else in the car? Mm-hmm. I don't think. And he starts the engine. And he begins driving off.
Okay. I unfold my own car that I've kept in my pocket. there's that, like, wasn't there some show in the 80s where a guy could turn into a car? I do that. No. Okay, I just kind of watch
Jason
it go.
The Wheel Warriors
there's some way to. There's some way to view a license plate or some identifying feature would be cool.
Yeah, go ahead and give me a roll.
Spot. I'm assuming that's a spot.
Mm-hmm.
We know I'm awesome at that. A 5 under 28.
Ooh.
Yeah!
I was going to say, we need at least a hard, if not
that's
an extreme.
That's extreme.
Yeah, an extreme is definitely going to give you the license plate. It is different than the one that Margo has. Or it doesn't ring a bell or anything, and, you commit it to memory.
Right.
And the car takes off, keeping its headlights off for a while, just driving like in the darkness.
Hmm.
And eventually you no longer hear the sound of it. We come back to Vaughn staring at this gentleman. As you approach, an older man slaps Lawrence Fane on the back and he puts on a long overcoat and a knit cap, and he says,
"I must to work, Mr. Vane. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Stick around, won't you? Once I relieve the boys at the mines, they'll know you're going to come. They're going to come here, and they're going to want to say hello to you. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. Always a pleasure."
And he picks up his things and walks out. And the young man kind of follows him out. And as his eyes are following the older man out, they catch you, Vaughn. And he smiles. And he says, "Well, hello there, old sport. What corner of God's green earth did you emerge from?"
I hope you don't terribly mind if I join you.
Oh, not at all, please. I detect from your accent you're a fellow countryman, but yet I've never seen you around Lesser Adel. Where are you from?
It's bred in Eagle's Grange, not terribly far from here. But, I've been rather peripatetic since then. I've spent some time in Asia, South America, America. I'm only lately returned, old man.
Oh.
But I've never made my way to Lesser Edale before. It's a pleasure to meet the laird of the manor, so to speak.
I must say, a man about the world such as yourself, and yet you chose Lesser Edale as a destination for your holiday. What, I'm flattered, but as someone who has traveled all of the continents, why Lesser Edale?
Well, when one's been so long away from the bosom of Albion, one... is drawn to its little hamlets where the hearth fire still burns for Britannia. But also, a friend of mine, I think, was curious about this particular locale as well, and I'm sort of following his footsteps, as it were.
Oh, I see. And are you traveling alone or with anyone?
Oh, no, I have a rather eclectic assortment of companions.
Ah, I see. He lights up a cigarette. Do you smoke?
Oh, may I? Yes, I will. I reach over to light his.
Oh, very kind. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Villiers, old man. Vaughn Villiers.
He, like, shakes your hand with the cigarette hand. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Villiers. My name is Lawrence Vane. That would mean something to everyone else in this bar, but probably nothing to you. My father is the lord of the manor, as it were. If you've seen the city during the daytime, you've no doubt seen the castle at the top of the hill. I call that place my home.
Well, you're being frightfully modest, Mr. Vane. Yes, your reputation indeed precedes you. It seems as though you're on everyone's tongue that we've spoken to here in Edale.
Well, I try to be a man about town, as it were. I have a lot of free time, especially now that my father is here ruling from his seat. And I like to be out here and amongst the common folk, as it were. Ultimately, when I take over one day, I hope to still be able to do these things, although my father says things will change then. I'm happy to enjoy the fruits of my freedom, as it were.
Yes, and it's then how delightful it is to meet one so well-bred and so gilded by gentility who still has the common touch.
You've quite a way with words, Mr. Villiers. Are you a poet or perhaps a writer of some sort?
No, I've had friends who were. But I'm an amateur of letters only. I'm curious, though, being not local. If I and my friends might, only because we've heard so much about its ancient beauty from the local vicar, if we might see Plum Castle with our own eyes. Do you accept visitors?
not in the conventional sense, but I would be very happy to extend an invitation, perhaps a dinner for your friends and yourself tomorrow evening. I would be much obliged. Yes, I imagine someone as well traveled as you would have many a story. It would delight my father and sister and I to hear of such things. Perhaps 4:30 tomorrow evening, you come to Plum Castle, I'll let the servants know to expect you, and we'll have a fine dinner.
You may count on it, Mr. Vane. I should never miss the opportunity to enjoy the pleasure of your company.
Well,
I am curious, though. There are, yes. Speaking of stories, and my friends and I have a great many, there are a great many stories sort of circulating here in Lesser Edale that, one finds rather shock-making.
I'll stop you right there, Mr. Villiers. I imagine I know what it is you are driving at. You wouldn't be the first coming here as a, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, a bit of a sensation seeker, though I'm not saying that is what you are doing here. We have had some troubles as of late. I'm sure the London tabloids are flush with stories of certain things that have occurred here. But I don't begrudge your interests, as it were. I'm sure it's very titillating to hear of such things. But it was a terrible bit of business that happened, and now I'm pleased to say the strength of our community is in how close knit we are, and we are working to heal together, as it were.
Yes, yes. So I shouldn't be surprised if you don't believe in the rather colourful local folklore surrounding the unfortunate incidents that have plagued your community of late?
Regale me with such folklore. Maybe I'm not familiar.
Oh, well, not to speak the local tales to the Lord of the Valley, but it seems as though every tongue in Lesser Edale is rather obsessed with tales of the local legend of the Black Dog. That it wasn't an accident or mischance that led to the unfortunate deaths of the three
citizens of your small hamlet, but a rather monstrous beast right out of the medieval imagination.
I never met my mother, Mr. Villiers. She passed away in giving birth to my sister, as it were. I mean, I imagine I met her, but I have no memory of it. I was raised by my father, but he was very busy, and I had several, we called them nurses, that would take care of us. And one of my earliest memories are the fairy tales they would tell me to go to bed at night, and I do remember such a tale. You are a curious fellow, Mr. Villiers. However, I would suggest don't think that those sort of tales are true, have any verity whatsoever. Whatever happened here is thankfully over with, or so we hope, and we would like to keep it that way. Listen, it was a pleasure meeting you. The dinner invitation is still on the table. I would love to see you and your friends tomorrow evening, 4:30 p.m. Perhaps we can continue this conversation and I can learn more about you, your travels, and your friend, as it were, that put you on to this place in the first place. But I'm so sorry. I must leave, and I feel terrible. I told that night watchman that I would wait around for the workers, but please, a round of drinks for everyone here. And he throws like a couple pound bills on the bar, and everybody's like, cheer. Bill Whitlock grabs the money. He's like, oh, they're all cheering him. He's like, take care, everyone. Have a wonderful night. Don't get up on my occasion. And he walks out the door.
Yes, delighted. Delighted. And yes, Von's gaze lingers a little too long as he walks out the door. And
a wet Carter walks in just as he leaves.
I just bump right into him. Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's my fault, my good man. I didn't see you there.
Oh, handsome devil. And then I move past him. And I go right up to Von.
Yes.
Hey. What? Why you look like that? What's up with your face? Your face.
What?
Snap. Like a daydream or something. Anyway, listen. Dude was eyeballing the ladies. At first I was like, well, this guy's probably going to try to work some magic on the ladies. But he didn't. He was watching, like, really, like, steely-eyed, right? And I drew up all my courage, and I walked in his direction. But he got up, and he ran out, so I followed him. And he got into some car that he parked off the road and drove away. I, of course, was in a bush. But I saw the license plate, and I got it. So something's up. Someone's keeping tabs on us, just like that car in London.
My God, Dillinghast. You were there in hot pursuit of this bagger?
Yeah, I couldn't see well to start with, but then stealthed the shit out of it. And again, jumped in a bush.
Yes, your quick thinking and good luck that nicely concealing shrub was so nearby.
Yeah, but,
My God, anyway. this is the second auto that's been... It's been exactly. Lurking around.
Yeah.
Casting
glances towards. Got the full plate, the full license plate, though. It's all up here. Steel trap. Tink, 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 tink.
Margot and Feyruz, you see Vaughn and Carter chatting. Carter's soaking wet, and you also by now would have noticed that who Vaughn went to speak with, who you assumed was Lawrence Vane, has left.
Well, don't make any plans for tomorrow, old man. I'm afraid I've just gotten us an invitation to dinner.
Oh, where?
Up at Plum Castle, old boy.
Oh, fuck. Well, Margaret, great, I guess.
You and I have a longer discussion to have. But right now, it seems as though two people have pissed off, and I, by the looks of their faces, it's somebody notable. Shall we?
She looks over. She goes, oh my God, why is he wet?
Okay. Yeah, she'll walk over.
Yeah, he's like really gesticulating. Yes. He's like, ah.
You have like a twig in your hair.
Comes over like, why the devil are you covered in wet leaves? You're just peeling them off of him.
Well, I'll tell you. And I tell her everything I just said to Mom.
Someone was watching us?
Yeah, some dude. And it's he got in his car.
More lurkers and skulkers seem to have followed us here.
Mm-hmm. Well, what made you believe that it was... I mean, people look. We're obviously not from around here. Was there something that...
Call it an intuition. Call it instinct. Call it expertise, if you will. But I knew something was up with this dude. And And sure enough, when I started to make my way towards him, he got up and he took off. It's just like what happened in London when that car took off when I tried walking up to that.
He ran off.
Nobody parks a car off the road in the dark. That's crazy. He did that, got in, took off, got the plate though. Tink, tink.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Would anybody be here looking for any of us? Why are we being followed?
That is the question, old man. Oh, indeed.
Like, nobody knows that we're here, right? Nobody knows we're in England. We didn't tell anybody.
And we
didn't make any calls across the ocean to anybody to tell them.
No, we so clearly blend in.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, if someone did tell us... No, I don't know why I would be upset about that. I'm not going to tell them.
Well, we have been asking rather a lot of questions around the Blue Pyramid Club, around the Penhew Foundation. If indeed these are a cover for some sort of black sect, then we must be forever vigilant and on our guard. As I always say, I the eyes of the opposition are ever on us. Mm-hmm. But perhaps we're drawing our snare closer around whatever it is that's causing the disturbances around here. I at least have got us an interview up at the manor house tomorrow at 4.
We couldn't make that like a brunch. We couldn't make that like a daytime. Maybe just some finger sandwiches during the day when there's no creatures lurking.
Oh, come, 4 o'clock. I suppose we'll be leaving around sunset, but we'll just swing around for tea.
I mean, it gets dark here at like 12:30 in the afternoon.
Yes, there's a couple hours of sunlight around about noon.
I bet you they'll send us a car back and, yeah.
Okay.
Well, how fortunate that you were able to set up such a lovely and convenient meeting.
Yes,
I can't wait to learn what he has to say and what we can learn from him, because it seems like people are full of surprises around here. She looks over at Margo.
Okay. Rather loaded. But I found young Mr. Vane terribly accommodating, although when I brought up the legends of the black dog, he cut short our interview and headed back to the hills. Seemed as though he was rather loath to discuss it. Rather quick to sweep it under the rug.
Okay. Well, we're going to have time tomorrow. I'm wondering if, let's say, just for shits and giggles, we're about to go to an evil castle tomorrow night. What if we hit up that vicar about this order of the golden druid ding derwitch? Whatever the fuck. Someone's got it written down.
I have to confess, I'm with you, Tillinghast. The Derwent Valley Order of the Golden Druid is plaguing my imagination as well. I think perhaps the time for shrub-lurking stealth is past, and we should just ask the churchman outright.
Yeah, let's bring it up, because who knows? Maybe he's got some kind of cool, like, holy relics that we can use as, like, weapons... You know, against whatever creatures we're going to face. It could be awesome. We could get all kinds of cool shit that will then maybe we sell later. But we'll see what happens.
Yes, while you're talking, Margo makes eyes at Feyruz being like, see? Just asking people about orders. I don't say that out loud, but like, you know, that's what my eyes say to her.
you could have just asked like that. Yes. That or okay.
If someone's a member of an order, they just can't keep it secret forever.
No, they want to talk about it.
Orders will out. Yes, and who knows? At worst, we get some more information about exactly what the hell is going on here. And at best, perhaps he gives us a sword made out of a piece of the True Cross.
That's true.
I think we're all getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves, but I will say. That should anybody have any extra, I will also check if there's any extra silver jewelry lying about to distribute it amongst ourselves before heading out.
You want to pickpocket everybody in the bar for their silver?
Well, actually, I was going to bring it up.
Grab silver earrings.
That's sleight of hand, right? Wait a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll
keep
an eye out.
This would be the place to do it.
Do you want to? So you want to pay a nighttime visit to the Reverend? Go back there.
That's what I was thinking.
Do the old Columbo? Just one more thing.
Since Myra was telling us he burns the midnight oil, I think it might be time to rap on that chamber door.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so the four of you, after meeting Vane, Carter having this interesting sort of, what do you want to call it, a encounter? Wasn't really an encounter because you didn't speak, but you followed this guy into the rain. Margot discovery. And Firuz. Discovery, thank you. Margot and Firuz finding a little bit more about each other. You leave the bar. It's still raining out, but it's certainly not what it was like when the skies opened up shortly after the church service. You stroll over to the vicar's house, and just as his housewoman said, his housekeeper, Myra, the lights are on. It's like a flickering candlelight. Who does what?
Yes. Well, let's hope that Myra's getting out in this moisture. The lady is just simply a humanoid lump of dust.
She's gained 30 pounds in the last 5 minutes.
Forgot how
she very exorbitant sleeps lady, in a no tub. Doubt.
Myra the arid.
Is there a window to look into before?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of peer in and you can see... the Reverend is just like at his desk and he's rubbing his temples and he's looking at one book, looking at another, just like
those books.
Scribbling, and you know, he takes his glasses off, rubs at his temples some more.
Is it anything, any of the books that were already laid out open that Tillinghast has seen, or is this like something else?
Yeah, if you point it out to Carter looks in like maybe that's one of those books on Latin translation that he saw. It's kind of unclear. The desk was a mess of papers, and it's still, there's no order to it whatsoever. And he's poring over these papers, doing something.
All right, who's going to take point? And lube this guy up, so to speak, verbally, of course.
Of course.
Yes. Let's lubricate the vicar.
Episode title.
I've been known to be persuasive.
Yeah. Plus, maybe you guys can talk about... Forget it.
What? What?
Talk about what?
Nothing. I'm not talking about any orders. Knock, knock, knock. Just immediately knocked on the door.
Okay. Yes, Sour, you can play the heavy, and I'll provide the charm.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds good.
You knock on the door, and if you're still peering in, you see him get up and kind of walk over, curious, opens the door. Good evening. Is everything all right?
Well, that's rather what we'd like to know, old man. Won't you let us in out of the rain?
I hope you don't mind. I'm just curious what this is about for you to return here at this hour of the evening.
The Order of the Golden Druid.
The Durant Order of the Golden...
That part too, yes.
Druid, all right, what would you know?
It's better if we talk inside, sir.
All right, yes, fine, please, please come in. He closes his bathrobe.
Oh!
It's like,
I didn't know you guys actually ever changed clothes. That's funny.
Yes, no, I was going to be going to bed soon. I'm just finishing up some work. What would you know of the order? What is this about?
We were rather.
I did my
you
job.
Tell us. We seem to find orders wherever it is we go, Stratton. More often than not, their intentions are malign. While some see this as no more myth and folklore and hokum, we've seen that it's all too real. What is this order, man? Are you a member? Out with it.
I am a member, but how do you even have that information? I don't. I mean, I guess that's neither here nor there. It's I'm more than just a member. I'm a secretary, as it were. I help to create the organization. It is a. I don't know what you'd call it. It's an order devoted to historical research of pre-Roman Britain. It's really nothing of great interest. I mean, it's of great interest to me. It was a hobby of mine and something I was very interested in. I found that others were as well, both here locally and in neighboring villages. And we set up we call it an order. I guess we maybe too much time reading the Bible. I thought it had a nice ring to it, but...
Wait, this isn't some fucking ancient society where you guys fight monsters?
No, it's just the contrary.
Not a colorful name for a group of history boffins.
God damn it!
Yeah, do a psychology. Yeah, it's just that does sound more exciting.
That's a big failure.
I'll try two while I'm quiet. It's a regular success.
Regular success. He seems pretty genuine. Yes, I apologize if this seems rude, but why bother me at nightfall to ask me about this order? And also, how would you even know that I was a member of this if you weren't out there snooping and asking questions? I mean, I have nothing to hide, as it were, but...
And it's not a secret. Yes. Is it?
No. I just seems rather strange to come barging into my home to give me the third degree here about a historical society.
It wasn't strange when we thought you were a monster killer. Fuck! And Carter just goes off into the corner, like really mad.
Forgive my American friend's rather colorful language. Sour?
Listen, we want to help with what is happening in the town. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I feel like everyone we talk to is not giving us truly what they know or what they think. You are obviously still troubled. You stay awake at night. You are stressed, poring over all these documents. We thought maybe the order had something to do with it. I guess it doesn't, but we're just looking for anything here. What is going on? What might have happened to our friend? How does it relate?
Or doesn't it? You say that this order is committed to pre-Roman British times, gathering artifacts and whatnot. Locals are members as well. What sort of artifacts are you on the hunt for, old man?
And as this conversation is beginning, Feyruz walks over with a handkerchief over towards Tillinghast as though she was like going to clean up all the residual leaves and shit. But I would like to take a closer look at what's on his desk.
Okay. So he... You walk over there and you see he has like a book, looks like a handwritten journal maybe, open, and it's in a language I don't believe you know. And then next to it is, it kind of looks like this translation guide from Latin to English. And you see papers that looks like he's trying to suss out what one thing says. Now, keep in mind, if he was a Catholic priest, you guys had mentioned last week, he would know Latin at this time. But this is a vicar, which is almost like a, in some places, it's more of an honorable title than anything else. But they do call him the Reverend, but it's a Protestant, so it's not so strange that he wouldn't know Latin. Mm. You see that without kind of arousing his suspicion. That's all you really see. If he were to start rifling through, he'd be like, "Hey, blood's gone." I'm not certain what it is that you are asking of me. There are things that I do as a man of the Lord that are private between the Lord and I. And if that were to change, then I'm rambling. I don't understand what it is you want of me.
Well, two things spring rather hastily to mind, Stratton. Is this order of yours, as innocent as they may be, on the trail of some specific artifact? Is your order funded by a wealthy benefactor, an organization?
No, it is a simple historical society. I, I admit that we'd make it sound much fancier than it is, but we don't even have enough money for pastries at the local meetups.
So no pastries at your mixers?
No.
Damn.
How do you get people to attend if there are no
people that have a passion for learning? Their passion for learning outweighs their passion for powdered donuts.
Ugh, barf.
Okay, in part two, other question, and Tillinghast told us that there was a Latin to English dictionary. We've seen him from the window.
Yeah, looking from something one book with the word vein on it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is it that you're translating, Stratton? Is it something for your sermonizing?
Yes.
Yes. Mind if I have a look? Part.
Oh no, no! And he walks over to his desk and just starts covering everything. No, it's a jumble. It's a longer project of mine. It's something I'd rather not discuss.
Oh, please! The dons
time.
Of my school gave me a cursory knowledge of Latin, which I've tried to bone up on in recent years as I've become more and more a devotee of the Roman Rite. And I will try to push the papers back out of the way to get a look.
He's like, no, please,
I'm going to grab whatever that Latin text is.
Yeah,
I'm going for
fucking it. Get it.
Do
please,
it.
You, and he just kind of like resigns to let you take it. And you
and now's the time where
Latin,
I roll
right?
Latin.
Yes. Yes!
Latin. What do you have in Latin? A 40%, I
40.
Believe?
I have a 40. I have a schoolboy's knowledge. Let's see what I can glean. Here we go. Oh my god. I couldn't be happier about this. I rolled a 2 under 40, an extreme Latin success. Folks, this is why we play Call of Cthulhu.
The mid-season finale, Latin!
I mean, that is so ridiculous.
In some games, you slay dragons. In some games, you translate dusty old Latin tomes, and they both rule.
Equally satisfying.
Yeah.
Latin Slayer.
all right, so this is amazing. You pick it up and you see him like, no, but he doesn't fight you. He's an old man. He doesn't even attempt to fight you. And the rest of you notice not only does he not fight, but he almost is looking imploringly towards Vaughn ever since he mentioned that he has some sort of understanding of Latin.
Hmm.
And you start looking at this journal and you see what he's translated thus far. And it starts off sort of foretelling about a local legend that speaks of a large hound-like creature said to walk the land around Edale. And the legend recalls that the beast was once the working dog of the last squire of the village, which howled for 3 days and nights at the passing of its master. And Edale folk in this legend believe that if the howling should ever start again, it means someone will die. Among the further pages that the Reverend seems to be translating, you see a passage relating to the trial of the Witches of Bakewell in the year 1608. And it mentions a Lady Evangeline Vane, who was a witness for the prosecution. And so it appears that in 1608, a Lady Evangeline Vane gave testimony at the trial of two women accused of witchcraft, known as the Witches of Bakewell. And the evidence given led to the sentencing of the young women to be hanged until dead. The legend says that one of the witches, a young girl by the name of Annie Stafford, put the mark of the beast on all the daughters of the Vanes.
Amazing. Okay.
And there's more there, but at that point, Reverend Stratton is like, you must understand, I'm trying to help Lord Arthur. I'm trying to help the entire family. Something is wrong, and I'm very close. I'm very close, and I
Lord Arthur commissioned this. Vane's commissioned this translation, did they?
Essentially, they don't have the means. They are nobles by birth. They are not. They don't have the same education as I do. They don't speak languages. I mean, I don't even speak Latin. But I'm an educated man. I'm trying to help them. There is something wrong. There is something wrong, and I am attempting to help. I've gotten as far as the legends, but there's something much deeper here, and that is what I'm trying to uncover.
But what could be wrong? Everyone only says good things about them.
The Vanes are above board. Perhaps you should sit.
Oh, okay.
Sounds cool.
I have been working on this ever since, probably 2.5 months, ever since the first murders took place. I'm not sure where to begin. There's something wrong with the daughter.
Oh.
Eloise. I do not know the full extent of it, but they came to me asking for help to try and figure out what is going on. Lawrence discovered these legends and pointed me in the direction of the trials, but both Lord Arthur, his son, and I all believe there is something deeper going on here, and that is what I am struggling to find out. He goes and he's like moving these papers around. There's text here that even the most there's an older Latin than I can understand. It doesn't make sense. Perhaps you could help me translate.
Well, you know who's a bookworm, and he like points at Feyruz.
I would be happy to take a look at it.
Do you speak Latin, or can you read it? Can you understand it?
Well, I could read it, but understanding it will take a little bit of time. I do study cryptography, and so it is my area of expertise to take things that are unknown to me and translate them, regardless of the language. It does take some time, though.
Happy perhaps to if it. The
between,
three of us...
Maybe between... Yes. Myself, Mr. Villiers, who is a renowned Latin scholar, and yourself, I'm sure that we could make some breakthroughs in this concern.
Yes, perhaps the three of us could get to the bottom of what is happening here.
Can you guys do it by 4:30 tomorrow? Because we're going to have dinner with the Vanes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been at work at this for some time. Maybe it would be best to sleep on this, start first thing in the morning and with a clear head, as opposed to working straight into the night. If the three of us or the five of us put our heads together, we could perhaps crack what is going on here. I've just been working myself, and I am at a loss, while I also feel so close to understanding what really happened here. I don't think that someone cursed their bloodline because of a conviction. There's something else here. Something dark.
Yes. Stratton, are you working off of a document of 1608 that is referencing older materials? Or do you have...
Yes, there are older materials. Something from before this that I think is the heart of the matter. The Vanes, you must know, have entrusted me with this secret. I feel as if I'm not only betraying them, but betraying the Lord as well by telling you this. But I deem from the moment I met you that your hearts are true and your aims are just here. So just please keep this between us until the time is right. And I'm sure if we're able to figure this out, the Vanes would be most grateful for anything you can do to help them. And I'll tell you, whatever it is you search for in the world, having Lord Arthur Vane and the House of Lords as your allies would be a very good thing to have.
Yeah, they're loaded, right?
Yes, they are. They are quite well off.
Good to know.
But they have connections all over. These are good friends to have, but they are also bad enemies. So,
question being, do we... are we forthright with them and tell them our intentions of everything that we're working with you on now? Or do we try to gain whatever information we can without gaining an enemy, as you say?
I think it depends on what we find out tomorrow morning. I guess if we're not going to research now.
That's what I think as well, yes.
Is there
perhaps
a place...
the fruits of our research will dictate what to do next.
Mm. Is there a place in the morning where we may procure some pastries?
That would be lovely.
On our way over to you.
Yes, we could have our own door of the Golden Druid meeting right here.
Yeah, about that. Here's a little just food for thought, sir.
Yes.
Maybe rename your little club the Order of the Crusty Old Nerdy Bozos or something, because what you're doing right now, it's throwing off. It's throwing everything off. You know,
there's no fun in that, Mr. Tillinghast.
Like something like, you know, classy, like a mystery squad, right? Like something like, you know, you hear that, you're like, I know exactly what they do.
That's just right? Sounds silly.
There's no ambiguity there.
What are you talking about? There's an innate dignity in the name Mystery Squad.
Exactly.
The Order of the Golden Druid conjures up an image of people with long, flowing white robes and wands made of mistletoe.
Yeah, fucking swords and shit.
Are you telling me you don't go in for any of that sort of thing, Stratton?
Do you LARP at all when we meet you?
I don't understand what that is. We do have robes, but it's really just, it's like a team shirts that we wear. We spent all the money on that, which is why we don't have pastries.
All right.
Anyhow, I'm very tired, and
as excited as I am
to dive into this, I must. I will pray on this. Yes, I will pray for our success tomorrow. First thing in the morning, and we will get after it, and we will try to uncover as much as we can before your dinner meeting. Just please keep a low profile until then.
Yes. Of course.
We are masters of disguise and shall stealthily blend into this quiet of town.
And we'll be back here tomorrow with some meat pies or some shit.
Wonderful. And you must know that I never intended to lie to you in any way. I just was trying to protect the sort of truths that were entrusted unto me from the Vaynes. But I feel as if in a way that you were sent to me from God, and in his name we will get to the heart of the matter.
Yes, too right. Too right, Stratton. Now you're beginning to get the picture. I too will keep you in my prayers. We'll see you in the morning, get some rest.
All right.
And we'll be your study buddies in the morning.
Good evening. And he shows you out, closes the door, and we'll be right back after this break.
All right.
All right, we're back. Now, listen. You just terrorized this poor old vicar. You grabbed his books. You messed up his shit. Going back to the Laughing Inn, or you're going to explore something else in the night?
Do we go back to the graveyard?
We did tell him we would be low key tonight.
Let's just go to bed.
Yeah, but we just said.
You are what the mystery squad. It's probably like 9:30.
Oh, we can't go to bed now. It's lame.
I guess there is no, like, I guess it's too late. I was like a silversmithing jewelry shop, like anything around.
A new place just opened this
break
morning.
Break into the church.
Maybe the grand church opening.
There are silver necklaces.
Turn your gold into silver.
Yeah. Well, the new Zales just opened down the block.
There is an alchemist nearby.
Oh, maybe went to Jared's. Maybe tomorrow when we meet with him, we can be like, hey, can we just take those necklaces on the gravestones?
Yeah. Yep.
You mean the crucifixes?
The crucifixes.
Put there by
I assume they were necklaces. I don't know why.
Yeah, they probably were.
Yeah.
All right, so are you guys want to do any sort of exploring, or you want to just, like, we go into bedtime straight to coming back to the vicar?
I mean,
did the church have, like, an office situation?
No, it was a pretty small church. It looked like there was maybe not even a bathroom there. It was like just the gathering hall for those of you that were in the service. And then the vicarage is close by on the other side of the graveyard. And that's his, where all of his stuff is.
I mean, this mysterious car that you said that you saw, maybe we can try to trace the tire marks, but that involves walking around at night.
But what was, like, what was the make of the car? Was it a common vehicle, or is it an unusual one? What color was it? Maybe it shouldn't be hard to spot.
These are all great questions that I obviously know. Given my role.
I'm looking up classic British cars from the 1920s. Are you pretty sure it was a Goodwood Revival? No, I don't know.
Anyway, yes, it was. I think it was normal. I think I would have...
A Leominster. A classic Leominster.
It's a Jaguar.
Did you get a good look at the man, or...?
I did, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
What did they look like?
Well, Troy will tell you.
He was young, maybe like mid-30s. And maybe mid to late 30s, dressed like everybody else in the bar. And also he had a little cap, no striking features, nothing jumped out.
You got it. There it is.
Yep.
So,
right then.
Striking. We'll just keep our eyes open for any other interlopers snooping around.
Yeah, I say we go back, have a pint, listen to some twiddle fiddle, whatever music they're listening to in there. Chill out. We got a big day tomorrow.
Big day tomorrow. So you go to bed. Maybe go back, have a drink.
Yeah, we're not dorks.
Right. Have a couple. Stay till last call. You never got your free drink from Lawrence Vane. No. So you go back. You awkwardly say, hey, that free drink that he offered, I know we left and came back.
That's still good.
That guy, yeah.
We were here. We were here in the room. And he's like,
surely right. That beer is still warm as it was when it was poured.
Oh, this is ice cold.
This beer's ice cold. In typical Mystery Squad fashion, maybe send you guys it overdo it a little bit in the middle of a mystery.
Sure.
You wake up the next day and you show up at the vicar's house. You knock on the door and he opens the door wide-eyed, his eyes bloodshot. He's wearing normal clothing. He's not wearing his bathrobe anymore, but he's like all disheveled. And he's like, please come in, come in.
I say, Stratton, it doesn't look like you took your own advice.
I know pride is a deadly sin. Maybe I was too proud trying to just figure this out myself. I ended up I feel as if I didn't sleep. I was up all night. Did you bring meat pies and pastries?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Reach into my breast pocket.
I'm starving. Please, come in. I've uncovered a few things, but there's still so much more. Basically, the thing that I have been... I hope you don't mind if I'm just going to jump right in. The thing that I've been most drawn to since the Vanes came to me and said that there was a problem with the daughter was the journal of an older vicar, a previous man of the cloth, as it were, who seemed to mention things similar to past Vanes had gone through. And so I became drawn to that, and then that led me to the legends and back again. But it all ties to something that happens to a Vane girl on their 21st birthday. And this is what I cross-referenced all throughout the night, and it seems to be tied to this. And young Eloise had just turned 21 before that full moon that happened and these attacks. Now, you should know, even though I'm close with the Vanes, they haven't given me quite all the details, but it appears that she is undergoing some sort of illness that is either tied to the moon or tied to her turning 21. I'm going to have another meat pie and just take a breath.
Well, it's not very common for girls to get sick when they turn 21.
Is it 21 when everything starts to change?
And the moon thing also isn't an illness.
I've never married. I don't... Never made love.
Carter's also kind of like leaning in, like, yeah, what...
Yes, there's none of that. There's no such thing as pee cycles. It's a lack of male concern for the female anatomy in general.
I see. Well, that was, I'm still not 100% sure. But I'm glad you're here. Let's dig into this and see what we can see. You have until when? 4:30. You'll need to leave here by 4:15, 4 o'clock. All right, we should be able to make some headway. If not, you'll need to just pretend that you know nothing when you go there until we can present him with actual helpful information. Yes?
Of course.
Practice the utmost discretion, Stratton. Now, what is the piece of this puzzle that's bedeviling you?
Let's dig in.
Montage.
It's a montage, the study montage. And this is going to take some time. And the time it takes is going to be pretty much determined by the rolls. I'm going to have another Latin roll here just to see sort of the breadth of how the speed with which you're able to help. And then let's do a cryptology roll, Feyruz, just to see how much you're able to take what Vaughn is saying and kind of understand it in a possibly deeper context. Okay. Or to realize that, like, you're of no help whatsoever, that this is just a straight translation and there's really nothing cryptic about it.
Okay.
Here comes that Latin roll. Come on. Favor me again. Oh, no. Sometimes lightning don't strike twice.
Yeah, but you could still...
An 87 over 40. I would love to push a Latin roll. So
what's the worst that could happen?
If what you're actually doing is looking and helping, how do you do something different? If you're looking,
how do I do something different?
Stand on
I think
your head.
Yeah. If I'm silently reading, maybe I'm just I like I'm standing up, like in my shirt sleeves, and I begin kind of intoning and speaking the words more so. In order to get them into my head and like remind myself of like being a schoolboy and having all this stuff bashed in my head by rote.
I like this, and it's very unsettling, especially because you're not 100% sure what you're saying. You could be invoking some old curse.
Right, I'm just speaking a bunch of Latin out loud in a small little room. That always works out well.
I feel like Margo and Carter sitting in the corner being like...
Yeah, just like...
Okay. I failed again.
59 over 40. Okay. This is time.
You can tell me. Right. I pushed a Latin roll, so you tell me how this blows up in my face.
Okay. I'm going to put a pin in that. Let's see if Feyruz is able to help.
Okay. Success.
Holy smokes.
Like I rolled right on it.
70 on 70.
I could spend luck to make that a... No, actually, if it was a hard success, what would I need?
35.
30... Fuck it, I'll spend it. I'll do a hard success.
Okay. All right, so you spend luck to turn that regular success into a hard success. Meanwhile, Vaughn fails a pushed roll, after having extreme success the night before. Mm-hmm. So in the sort of meta of the game here, it's not like all of a sudden you can't read Latin. It's just it's taking a long time. And the results of the fumble will be clear soon. Feyruz's cryptology, hard success, actually does reveal some interesting tidbits. So imagine this is happening over the entire day. What are Margo and Carter doing while the eggheads are busy cracking codes and translating?
I was going to ask, like, I know everything, it's about, like, journals and translating words. Is there any, like, art that I could help to look at?
Any sort of like illustrations or something? There is a symbol that you find in a one of the older tomes that the previous vicar had mentioned. Say it's artistic so much as just like disturbing. So you could give me some sort of a roll on that.
I have a fine art. Roll I could make. Whoa. That's why I ask.
Okay. Yeah. Give me a fine art roll.
We do have amongst us some jotted down symbols from stuff we've seen before.
Oh, you do. Yeah. You guys have taken many etchings of bas reliefs from pyramids.
So it's a 66. Rooms. I'm going to spend 6 points of luck to make it a regular success.
Okay. What I'll say is, you know, you're looking at the artistic connection to this. You know, you wouldn't know, oh, this is like a this so much as like, what does this mean? And you immediately start thinking of Miles Shipley and this symbol that you see, this very disturbing symbol, you distinctly remember seeing on the altar of the painting that was in the closet.
Whoa. Oh my God. So after I stare at it for a while and I realize what it is, I like maybe interrupt the vicar. I'm like, have you seen this symbol before? What does this mean to you?
Me? I'm sorry. I was talking to Vaughn. Were you talking to me? I was reading my notes.
Yes, this is your book?
Oh, yes, that symbol. Yes, that's one of the things I can't... There's a passage here that connects to it, but I can't seem to discover it. I know that this symbol is important to what's happening here, but I'm not quite sure. You say you've seen...
I've seen this before.
Where did you see it?
We were investigating another strange happening. I saw this symbol depicted on an altar in a painting.
An altar?
The altar of the Black Pharaoh, maybe? Does this sound...
No, that does not ring a bell, but perhaps some sort of pagan deity. This would make sense because I do feel as if this is deeper than some, you know, witch trial curse. Good work, Miss Sauer. This may come in handy. And you continue to dig. And this is what you discover. It seems that for centuries, when a blood daughter of the veins reaches the age of 21, a transformation begins. And this is something that past centuries of the veins knew about and tried to keep secret. It is like a family secret that they hide from everyone. And for four generations, no vein daughters were born, and none of these transformations took place. So whatever this curse was lost to time until Eloise was born. Now, her mother died in childbirth, giving birth to her. Maybe that was something connected, and Reverend Stratton mentions that. Maybe something in the mother's passing was passed on to the daughter, but it wasn't until she turned 21, the first vein daughter that had been born in hundreds of years, or was it four generations? So it was 80 years that this happened, and the secret had not passed forward enough to the current veins. But as you dig deeper, and Feyruz uses her cryptology to try to understand this, you take this symbol, you realize what really is going on here. This is more than just these witches saying, "Your line is cursed." In centuries past, the forebears of the Veins enacted rites to a charnel god known as Mordigian.
Mordigian, the god, is the
Mordigian is the god's name. And the dead were offered in supplication to the deity during rites of cannibalism and debauchery. The older, like original OG veins, their blasphemous proclivities sowed a seed in their bloodline of this taint that runs deep in the blood of the veins. So in the acts, that these unspeakable acts that they did in celebration of their deity, Mordigian, caused a taint in their bloodline. And for unknown reasons, the blood taint is stronger in the females of the line. Every generation or so, it seems like the curse like skips a generation. These female veins begin to manifest the family's dark heritage. Occasionally a vain male has undergone this transformation, but in the main, it's the female veins who bear the brunt of this curse. And as you uncover this, it's like eye-opening. You guys spent all day trying to figure this out, like, what is going on here? And Strephon is like, yes, Yes, this makes so much sense. See, and he's pulling out like family histories of the Vaynes and tracing it. Like they didn't know. Lord Vayne didn't know this. They were innocent. They just had no idea because the translations have not been passed down and the information wasn't shared. The Vaynes, I know Lord Arthur Vayne. He isn't some sort of cannibal leading in debaucherous rites. I've supped with him at Plum Castle. I've never seen anything untoward. It's innate in her. And look here. It says that the transformations will happen at the phase of the moon, but eventually they become more frequent until they are permanent. There is no cure. The young girl is doomed. If these journals are correct, there is nothing to be done. Oh! Look at the time.
Oh, fuck.
And the results of the fumble is now at 6 p.m.
Oh, no.
You're late for your dinner.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, no.
We've lost track of time.
I was into watching other people read that I never once thought to look at the clock. God, you guys are just so attractive. That's what it really is, I think.
Or you kept trying to speak up, and they were like, quiet, Connor!
Yeah. But guys, it's time to... Okay.
We must be going.
Damnation, yes.
Wait, before we go, I just want to double check something, sir. Did you say it was the Lord who came and asked you to figure this out? Or was it one of the kids?
Lord Vayne and his son came to me.
They both came?
In secrecy, yes. Yes, they... I've seen Eloise and she seems perfectly fine. I don't think she has any knowledge of what's going on. They've been doing things to ensure that she doesn't remember. I'm not 100% sure.
But you say that she has recently turned 21 and that the son was seen to be quite disturbed that one night. He must have seen something. They must know something.
I imagine that they have not been completely forthcoming with me, but they at least entrusted me into trying to find a solution. And I will continue to study. Maybe the power of prayer could right this blight. But if this goes back to rites that were done in some dark god's name centuries upon centuries ago... This isn't something that can be cured overnight. I'm not trained in exorcism.
My curiosity now leads me to believe that possibly somewhere in this castle resides some remnants of these rituals and some artifacts that would lead us to more knowledge about this god that they once worshipped.
Yes, but there's no cure? No cure, Stratton? The only... Then the poor girl is surely doomed. What are we to do? Go to the Vaynes and reveal to them that if they don't wish the only female scion of their line to turn into a monstrous beast, that they must have the blood of their own child on their hands?
It seems that they've discovered some way to keep it at bay. She goes to church. She walks among us during the day. It's at night when this is a problem. Maybe in their mind, whatever they've done to sort of keep her safe in the evening is enough. That is no life. But if they believe that there is a solution, at least here it seems for centuries they've been unable to find one.
I just hope they haven't perhaps uncovered their old worshipping ways.
Perhaps locked up there.
Could we roll a Cthulhu mythos just to see if we can, like, know how to solve it?
Yes.
Off chance.
Yeah. I mean, you guys, some of you have been, digging into the knowledge that one should not have.
I mean, for Cthulhu mythos, I have actually quite a lot.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, you're getting there now.
But that still is, you know, a lot of Cthulhu mythos is still, like, under 10.
Right.
Nope. I failed, but I think I'll spend 10 to make it a success.
Ah. All right, so...
I have zero. It's not happening.
You... In listening to Vaughn and listening to Reverend Stratton, trying to figure out what is really going on here, believe this to be the taint of the ghoul. A ghoul taint. Which, whether you believe in legends, ghost stories, or in, you know, what you've seen and experienced firsthand, as the horror of the other side of the tapestry has been revealed to you, it is irreversible. There is no, the only solution is a second death.
And Feyruz just slowly looks up at Margot when asking, like, isn't there anything at the group? Like, isn't there anything that we can do? And she just very solemnly and slowly shakes her head. I'm afraid that with such a blight as this on their family bloodline, I'm afraid there is nothing we can do for Eloise. But hopefully there is a way to stop others from being harmed as a result of this.
So, wait, I just want to get this straight. We're going to go have dinner with these people, but for dessert, we're going to kill their daughter? Is that what we're talking about right now? Or we're just going to convey the information and be like, peace?
I'm afraid I don't have a solution to this, Tillinghast. I don't know what it is that we should be doing, but I can't help but think that there's some other information to gain, whether from their direct mouths or whether it's from their family's records that they might keep in their household.
Vicar, as far can as,
you... I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to ask the vicar if he can make us like a letter so that we can bring this up in a non-awkward way when we're there.
I could travel with you. I could make the trip. It may be the best way to do this. Can imagine Lord Vane being upset with me for sharing this information, but I can explain to him what happened, and I'm sure he'll understand. It is all in the service of trying to help his young daughter. Obviously, the news will not be what he wants to hear, but we have not made any decisions. We don't know what it is that can be done besides the obvious, which is not something I can do or can condone in yes. anyone.
Yes, there must be a way. There must be a way. Even if it's nightly confinement, as horrid as that sounds, at least her soul will be at liberty.
Here's just a thought that has probably no bearing on anything other than the Shipley symbol connection made me think of it. I have this vial of stuff that we took from Shipley's place. Does anyone remember why he was taking that other than to, like, hallucinate time-traveling lizards?
He had mentioned that he had... taken it to aid in his visions, I believe.
It wasn't to hold something off or hold something back or something, no?
I rather thought it was to induce the sort of temporal warping of his mind that gave him the visions that he so luridly depicted. Right.
So that's probably not...
But where did it come from?
Yes.
What is it exactly? Is what we don't know.
All right. Well, I'm not going to put it in their drink then.
Keep in mind that the creature, the lizard creature, Sithassa, had like a laboratory, a weird laboratory downstairs, right, and was dosing Shipley with that. It was like forcing him to take that so he could see things.
Right, okay.
That was like his, the gift. Oh, you want to be a famous painter? Mm. Take some of this.
Okay.
Buy the ticket, take the ride. So, shall we then to Plum Castle?
Yes, we're already late. While dinner may not be in the equation, we'll need to share this information. I'll do my best to keep up. I'm not as young as I once was, and I have not slept, but I feel invigorated by meat pie and sugar.
Yes, I'm terribly sorry for our tardiness. I blame my meager Latin skills.
Should I go get my shotgun?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, what? You're what?
Don't worry about
it. It's what we call our handbag, the
ladies
shotgun.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Nothing should concern you.
Thou shall not kill.
Okay.
Just, nope. Yep.
All right. Get your guns and let's go to the castle.
Oh, wait, Vicar. Does the Vicar have... I know we talked about this before. You got any extra silver doodads around we can kind of just have on us? Just, you know, for luck.
From the sounds of your friend, this is not a lycanthropy situation. Silver won't help you if it truly is ghoul taint.
I'm sorry.
What do you find something humorous about the phrase ghoul taint, Tillinghast?
It's just that I've heard the word now for seven times, and I've been keeping it from the first time.
You've
I've
done
been
your best.
Doing it, and it's finally here.
Taint of the ghoul. Okay, ghoul taint.
We don't know. Maybe ghouls aren't into silver either. It could be a whole monster thing.
Here, I have three silver knives.
Oh, great.
Those steak knives.
I'm putting them in my bandolero.
Yes.
Or bandolier, whatever it's called.
The five of you head to Plum Castle. It's far away. It stands on a stone bluff about 200 feet above Lesser Edale, so it really looks down on the valley with Mom Tor on the other side. So you've got two hills with Lesser Edale sitting in the middle. There's a winding road that leads directly from the village right up to the castle's entrance. As you're heading there, there's a second road that splits off, sort of a longer road that passes near the castle. From there you could walk, but, you know, the Reverend is leading near there. He takes you up the main road. You can tell as you approach that the castle has been rebuilt over the centuries. Its stone shell has been repaired and restructured, perhaps to conform to the architectural tastes of the times.
Oh, we heard all about this when the Vicar went on and on about it last...
Right, he gave you the whole history lesson. At present, it looks more like a Victorian mansion than like a classic castle, although its crenellations and aspect harken back to its... original past. You come up to the door and you knock, and an old servant opens, and he's like, "Welcome to Glum Castle. I take it you were supposed to be here for dinner with the Vanes at 4:30. I'm not sure if that invitation is still available, but you are guests here, so please come in."
Sorry,
I'm so sorry.
She looks behind her. Traffic. Yeah. the nothingness.
I see. Yes, well, please come in. I can bring you into the great hall and see if the Vanes will still receive you, but. I can tell you that the dinner has run cold. Follow me. And he brings you, there's like a main door, and then there's two side doors in this long sort of greeting area. And you see paintings of former Vanes, like probably chronologically, along the wall, some antiques. Overall, though, you can tell the castle has seen better days. This guy stops in front of a set of double doors, which looks like the way into the next room. He's like, "Oh, a bit of interesting history here. This main door has been immobile since the day that Charles I was beheaded. No one can use it anymore. So I'll be taking you through one of the side entrances. It's a little bit of history they like me to share with guests. I'm not sure exactly as to what its significance is. You know, perhaps the Vane ruler at the time heard that the Charles had been beheaded and said, what are they beheading rulers left and right? Lock, seal the doors, shut forever. I'm not sure, but it is an interesting interesting bit of history right this way. And he brings you to a side door and takes you into the Great Hall. And there are wood-paneled walls, tapestries, chandeliers, ornaments hanging everywhere. There's an ornate fireplace large enough to roast a pig, huge. And then these long tapestries hanging along the walls featuring different medieval scenes, stag's head, antlers, other curios. And the servant is like, oh, yes, welcome. This is the Great Hall. The fine wood paneling you see here was cleaned and refinished just before the Great War. Several new windows were cut in, providing a lighter, more airy atmosphere. And then a voice pipes up from the back, one which you have not heard. Oh, that will be all, Giles. I will call you presently, should we need you. Reverend Stratton, I wasn't expecting you. Are you the reason our visitors are tardy for dinner? And Lawrence is coming down, and he doesn't really say anything. And Reverend Stratton is like, Lord Vane, I do apologize. I am the reason, in fact, that your dinner guests are late, but we need to speak. And he kind of motions to the servant. And Lord Vane is like, this dude is polished. He's been trained in how to act. He doesn't give off like a hint that anything's wrong. That will be all, Giles. I will fetch you if needed. And the man walks out, and Lord Vane comes down. What seems to be the problem here? And Reverend Stratton says, first of all, you should know, Lord Vane, I in no way betrayed your trust. These good people have come because they wish to help, and they did help me in understanding what is going on with Eloise. And Vane just kind of bristles and says, I entrusted you with that information, Reverend Stratton. That was between you and I. Who are you people? And what are you doing in Lesser Adel?
I can assure you we came here with no intention of disrupting anything in this town or to be in any way disrespectful to your family or the situation, but truth be told, we've had some very tragic events happen surrounding a very dear friend of ours, and I can assure you we are only here to seek the truth and to find any sort of peaceful resolution to the situation. And if there's a way that we can help you in any way, believe me, we are only here to help with the best of intentions.
And what do the tragic events that befell your friend have to do with the Vanes or with my town?
Only that he was a man given to the research of certain... how shall I put it, Lord Vane? What people might call supernatural, uncanny, transmundane occurrences, and some of which we have ourselves borne witness to. He, I believe, was on the cusp of unraveling exactly what was going on here. We, not knowing exactly how it touched upon your family, came following in his footsteps, only to interview the good reverend here, and it was only by merest chance that we were able to lend our incredible cryptological acumen, here indicating my fiancé, to the...
Waves a ring.
to the issue. The issue, it seems, is the issue, your issue.
And Lord Vane perhaps softens a little bit and looks at the Reverend. So, can you help? Can they help in any way? And Reverend Stratton, I don't know, Lord Vane, but... I think it It's time we all know what is happening. And perhaps we all visit Eloise. And he says, she's got a headache and can't come to dinner. Yeah. And Lawrence puts his hand on his father's like arm and says, it's all right, father. Well, it's all right. Let me explain. And Lawrence says it all started the night of the full moon 3 months ago. I was out with the dogs in the morning light the next day when I saw her lying outside the castle, covered in blood. At first I thought she was hurt or perhaps was attacked, so I carried her in. The servants bathed her and put her to bed, and she had no memory of leaving the castle or anything strange that could have befell her when she awoke. And then we heard of the first murder. It couldn't have been Eloise. We were certain of it, but we also knew that something wasn't right, so we locked her away in her room until we could figure out what to do. And the next night, I was out at the Laughing Horse, actually. And when I came home, my father came running to me to say that she had escaped. Her bedroom door had been torn from its hinges. You have to understand, my sister is a slight young woman. It would be impossible for her to do such a thing. I went looking throughout town for her. This was the night that Lydia Parkins was found torn to shreds. I looked all over town for her and could not find her. Yet again, she came home with no memory. The third night, we took greater precautions, still unaware of what was happening, and she escaped again. We were not as practiced as we are now in confining her. That was when Harold Short was attacked, and I at that point saw her and saw what she had become. Maybe a part of her still knew who I was, and she ran, I know not, but God smiled upon me that night while he cursed her. Every night that this happened, she would wander back home as the sun came up. On the fourth night, we left nothing to chance. We drugged her and took her down to the family dungeon. We listened and we checked in on her, and nothing happened. We did it the next night, again, nothing. Again, we kept doing it, and then we started to think maybe it was the drugs. Maybe the drugs were stopping this transformation from happening. So one night we locked her in the dungeon without the drugs, and still nothing. So it was around this time that we thought that maybe it had something to do with the moon, the phases of the moon. So we waited, and when the moon came, sure enough, the transformation began. But she was drugged. She lay asleep in her cell. The next morning, she changed back. We let her out. We did that for 3 nights. And then on the fourth night, no problem. But then the pattern changed. The transformations began happening more regularly, now out of step with the phases of the moon. One night last month, she broke out. We weren't expecting her to transform. It had nothing to do with the full moon. She broke out and luckily only ravaged a cow in town. And now it's been happening more frequently. So every night we dose her and lock her away. And if we didn't know better, we fear that eventually she may change for good unless we find out how to stop it. And that is why we enlisted the help of the Reverend to try and find a cure. Her howls echo through the land on the nights that she changes. Soon the townsfolk will get wise. I go out and try to make it seem like everything is normal, as my father wishes, but everything is anything but. What have you learned?
dear boy. You and your family, it seems, have been through a great and terrible ordeal. I wish that we had better news to give you. Everything that we've discerned from the materials that you've provided to us seems to indicate that the changes that your sister is undergoing are doomed to become permanent. And there is nothing in the records that have come down to us for centuries that tell us any way to reverse the taint that seems attached to her blood. Is there some knowledge in your family of why she carries this bestial curse?
All we know is the stories of the witch trial, the mark of the beast. We just assumed that there was some verity to that. They say that witches did walk amongst us. Perhaps this woman, out of spite for being convicted, did curse our bloodline, and so the Reverend has been looking into that. Isn't that right, Reverend?
Well, I have no doubt.
Silent.
They're like, well, I have no doubt that the agents of the evil one did and do walk abroad. It is only a part of the story. I'm going to.
Might your family
deep history of your family.
Yes. Might your family have any personal records, heirlooms, anything of that sort? Possibly you may not, it may not be something that's legible to you now, but is there anything that the family has held on to?
Perhaps something with that looks like this.
The symbol, maybe?
Yeah.
Yes, anything from the original veins that's confused you.
I know that symbol. In our library, there is a book where that symbol appears frequently, but I cannot read it. This is somehow connected to what has happened to Eloise.
Yeah, are you aware of your family's religious history?
No, I know they say those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it, but I am not really interested in such things.
So Troy,
take us into your library.
Troy, I'd love to do a psychology off of that.
Yeah.
Off of asking him about the religious stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, super lying.
Wise.
I got a 37 under 50.
Nice.
37 under 50. He seems to not know. He seems really genuine to be surprised that there could be any religious connection.
And this is the son I'm talking to, right?
That's yeah.
Okay.
What does the dad look like while the son's telling the story? Does he look shifty at all?
He's just kind of like slowly sunk to sitting on the stairs that they came down. And he's got his head in his hands. He says, Father, I'm going to bring them to the library. And then I can bring you to her. You just have to promise me you will not harm her in any way.
I shoot a glance at Sour.
If there is no direct harm at us, I could assure you that no harm will come to her. And you do say
she will be asleep, and she will be in her cage.
And I just want to also
and
go
she
back.
She just kind of like at that at cage, just kind of.
The family dungeon. Winces. I guess I'm not used the to European dungeon. Customs, yeah. But and to have a family dungeon is very impressive.
Yes, you say that it hasn't been used in a long time.
I hope not.
But it's perfect for this occasion.
Of course, I'm sure it's finely decorated.
What a lovely room of death.
And you say that she has no recollection of these occurrences when she breaks free.
Bless her soul, she has no memory, and she would never in her right mind commit such unspeakable acts. You have to understand she wouldn't hurt a flower. Oh. If she were to know, we've never told her. Every night we just say, here's your tea. And she drinks it, and then we carry her downstairs and chain her to the wall.
Yes, I'm sure that there would be no way of making her remember such things as she looks at Tillinghast and then her eyes dart down to his side pocket and back up to his eyes.
My cologne? Oh, right, yeah, though, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The
juice.
All right, as long as we're all on the same page here, to the library. Father, I will take care of this. Reverend, would you stay with my father? And Reverend Stratton's like, of course, Lawrence. Lord Vane, and he just sits beside him, and as you're walking away, you can hear him, like, praying. And Lawrence takes you through the house and over to the library. And there are high-backed leather chairs, tables all over the place, white, large potted plants, beautiful windows that you imagine during the daytime. The light must filter in wonderfully. It must be a great place to just sit and read. There are world maps, encyclopedias. You're looking
Favors
around.
Is heaven.
Yeah, Favors is heaven. You start looking around, and he's like, the book with that symbol. Yes, here it is. And he pulls out a book, and it is like it's like a slim octavo volume. And he says, the Reverend was the one that was helping us try to uncover what's going on here, but I was trying to do my best to see if I could support him in his research, and I wasn't very helpful. However, when you showed me that symbol, I remember seeing it in this book here. And he opens up this dusty tome and says, ah, see? And you see like a, it's like a handwritten in archaic script in English of something with that symbol.
Very fascinating.
And you read it, and it talks about a form. This is like hundreds of years ago. One of the lords, his name was Lord Edgar Vane. And it's like his personal journal meant for only his eyes. And he's written that symbol. And as you look at it closely, it must have went straight over Lawrence's head. It's written in, it looks like what you would think is brown ink. It's dried blood. And it is describing the early religious beliefs of the Vanes and how they practiced devil worship and were dedicated to a blasphemous idol that he calls Mordigani. And you realize it must be like what he called Mordigian. It goes on to say that the family called upon this god to satiate their foul desires, and talks about cannibalism and horrible, unspeakable acts that they did with corpses, and these rites that they would do in Mordigian's name. And so it just corroborates everything you read. And the other thing, like, the early Vanes were indulging in horrible acts for this god, who in turn tainted their DNA with this curse.
Whew.
Hence the dungeon, apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's in English. So, like, we kind of... Right? It's in English?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, we kind of point that out to him, saying, yeah, see, this is what we learned earlier today, and it's confirmed right here. This is what actually happened and why this is happening to your family.
Curses can be lifted, though. Curses are lifted all the time, and they are fanciful. We can figure this out. I will take you to her, and we will examine her together. Just remember, curses can be lifted. I've read that there is such a thing as curses,
sure,
that can be removed.
Yeah, Feyruz puts her like a hand on Margot's forearm.
Yes, of course. All curses can be lifted. That's why we are here. We are here to help find a way to lift this curse.
Yes, all of us. Yes, no one is with
precious Eloise.
He rolls a psychology on you guys.
Do we want to, since we're in this library, does one of the nerds want to do a quick check to see? Yeah, just to check, like, are there any other books in here that might help
us? If we, swing open.
Carter
really wants to find a way around killing this woman, mostly because of having the connection to this family. Yeah. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, spot hidden maybe, because I'm looking for something that's maybe, not, like, maybe they're not telling us.
Yeah.
And it's...
I failed my spot hidden.
You failed.
Is that what we're rolling?
Success. Oh, man, I keep rolling right on it, right on the... regular.
You do notice that there aren't any books of the occult. This seems to be like a true library of knowledge. It's just that there is this journal tucked away in here, talking about the charnel god of the ghouls, Mordigian. But you don't see anything else, like, without hours of staying in here to really dig and see if there's anything else that could also reveal information about the greater mysteries at hand. Nothing like, at a quick glance, you notice, like, oh, if I pull on that candlestick, the case will turn around.
Quick, in a hushed, perhaps if there is anything else that would give us any knowledge on this matter, perhaps it's not here and hidden somewhere else in this house.
Yeah, my point is, maybe we don't have to resolve this right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, what if she's locked up and she's safe and she's not getting out? Maybe we go back to London at some point and we check out those books in that creepy basement Margot and I found or something. Maybe we can, you know, sort of tuck this away as on our to-do list. Do you know what I mean?
I'd love to see her.
Or, yes, we can see her.
We should check her out. And we should check the situation out.
Yes, indeed. I will approach Lawrence and put my hand on his shoulder.
Ah!
Apologies.
Sorry. Myself, man. A little jumpy.
Yes, I dare say. I think we all are. After what we've learned, I'm curious. I've noticed, of course, that you've got this sort of fashionable gothic exterior. But is there any part of Plum Castle that dates back to its 12th century roots? If my memory of what Stratton was going on about,
yes, any of the original foundation, perhaps.
The dungeon is obviously a part of the old tradition, but the only other edifice or structure that's really connected to the past is the mausoleum. It lies on the grounds outside. I've been there. There's really nothing to see.
Would it be at all inconvenient to you if we should have just a look
at the mausoleum? Sure, I suppose. I suppose you could. Would you like to go there before seeing Eloise?
Let's see Eloise.
Let's see Eloise.
Tension before. Is building.
Yes, I very much want to see her. And don't worry, Lawrence, if I may be so bold to call you that. One isn't responsible for the crimes of one's family's past. All of us bear some burden of original sin with which we suffer. But through grace, one can lift any curse that may plague us.
Yes. Yes, good. Good, I think we all understand each other. Come now, I should warn you, I don't know what kind of night tonight is. So.
Yes.
There's no way to know.
Prepare your minds against what you may see. All right, this way. And he leads you through the library into a long hallway into a, wine cellar, a wine room. And at the back of the wine cellar is a door. There's a little rock on the wall that has a key attached to it. He takes it off the wall, unlocks the door, hangs the key back on the hook, and then opens it. And there's a staircase that leads down. At first it looks completely dark, but then you see flickering torchlight, like bouncing off the walls of whatever's under Plum Castle. He's like, just watch your step. We keep the sconces lit for obvious reasons. But it's sometimes the condensation down here, it can be a little slippery. Right this way. And you go down this long flight of steps. You go deep, deep underground.
Carter's like, you go ahead. I'll just take up the rear here.
Yes. Yeah, God, Tillinghast, yes.
It's like right this way, and you go down the steps. It's getting colder and colder the further you go down, and eventually it opens into this dark stone chamber that is like freezing cold. You see ancient chains like hanging from the walls, and then cells sort of in the back around the corner. He says, We started with just the chains, but she quickly found a way out of those, so now we do the cell and the chains, and we try to keep her further away so that on the nights that she howls, it doesn't alert the staff, who most likely already know something horrible is happening with our family. Right this way. And we follow Lawrence Vane as he goes and walks down all of these empty cells. They stink. You can hear rats squeaking about. And you get to the last cell, and Lawrence's face, like, drops. He's like,
no.
Eloise? No. Eloise? Eloise? And you look in, and the chains have been ripped from the walls, and there is no one in the cell. And we'll see you next week.
Yep. Fucking. Yeah. Yep. That's
We're stuck in the dungeon with this beast.
Oh my god. Kaweh Kanem. Kaweh Kanem.
Oh man.
Glad I have my shotgun.
Good thing you stopped for your shotgun. Thou shalt not kill.
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. That's join the NAISH.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. We'll be right back.